My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius.
I am Iron Man.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Force Critic Podcast. I am your host, Eric Italiano, senior writer at BroBible.com. And today, as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Cade Onder, who you can find writing about video games at comicbook.com. Cade, I think today, the year is early, but this is probably our biggest show of the year so far.
Absolutely. Until probably Ant-Man, maybe. Depending on what that's
Ant-Man
like.
Or I would prefer Kang-Man since he seems to be the main character in that film. But today is not a day for Marvel.
No.
Today is a day for people like me who consider themselves DC heads. Kay, do you, in your heart of hearts, lean one way or the other?
Well, this is my guy right here.
Spider-Man.
Yeah. So I've always leaned... Only for that reason, really, is just Spider-Man's my number one fictional character ever. So, like, always that way. But I would say in terms of, like, the wider spectrum, I think I like Batman and Superman and Green Lantern, Martian Manhunter, all those guys a lot more. I grew up on the Justice League cartoon, which was huge for me.
Oh, yeah.
So
which I think is leaving HBO Max today.
Just fucking ridiculous. What are they doing over there? You're just kicking off some great cartoons, like amazing.
I know,
stuff.
And it's like that's the backlog stuff that keeps your service
absolutely
like deep, you know what
absolutely.
I mean?
Absolutely.
Like it's the ridiculous. Best teams have a deep bench, but
yeah.
All right, still. we're not here to dunk on deep.
This is a day of celebration, Eric.
Yeah. Because I think that it is a very exciting day. James Gunn, as promised, came out with his I'm kind of confused. He said that they've mapped out an 8 to 10 year plan.
Yeah,
I think what they've explained today is going to unfold over a much shorter time period than that.
Yeah,
so they have announced a total of five films and five TV shows. So we'll be breaking all that down, and then we will also be talking about The Last of Us Episode 3, which is being hailed as one of the best TV episodes of all time. So, pack show. Let's start with James Gunn. Let's start with some main bullet points and then we'll really dive in. As I said, he's got an 8 to 10 year plan. What this takes us through is, since he's saying Superman is kind of the start of it in 2025, I think this is like half of it, right? So
sure.
This probably takes us through like 2028 and they've got a bunch of shit still in the works. I've actually heard there is another film that they have already developed that they didn't announce today quite yet. So keep that in the back burner. So as I said at the top, five films and five shows. Superman Legacy, which Gunn has written and DC Studios co-CEO has said that he hopes James Gunn directs. There is Batman, The Brave and the Bold, which is going to be sort of the DCU's introduction into the Bat family. It's going to be Batman, Bruce Wayne, and Robin, Damian Wayne focused. There is Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow, there is Swamp Thing, and there is The Authority, which is kind of like the James Gunnian one of the whole, the one that he picked from absolute obscurity and will probably, you know, have a wild cast and all that stuff. And then the TV shows is an animated series, Creature Commandos, which is already written and done. They already shared artwork from it. Gunn wrote that himself. There is Paradise Lost, which is a Wonder Woman prequel that is set on theme Mascara, which Peter Safran compared to Game of Thrones. There is Lanterns, which is the Green Lantern show, which they officially compared to True Detective.
Awesome.
To say that's a stretch is putting it lightly.
Maybe, but it's still cool.
It's a great sales pitch, of course, but I mean, come on. There's Waller, which is still going to have previous DCEU continuity, which really just speaks to how much The Flash is going to fucking flip things on its head. The Flash, by the way, since we're talking about what's to come and not sort of stuff that's been out there, James Gunn said, quote, probably one of the best superhero films ever made, which largely tracks with like the rumors I've heard throughout the months and years. So, I mean, that's fucking hysterical.
It's crazy. And I believe he also said, even in his little video that he released, this restarts the DC universe. He said something along those lines. Yeah. And that's interesting. But yeah, I'm like, this is you made two Guardians of the Galaxy movies and the third one looks amazing. And you've been part of a really great franchise. And you're like, this is one of the best. Like, that's a He doesn't seem like the kind of guy to be PR.
Just be saying that. Yeah. Would just be so, like PR gun to head off screen. Like, say it's one of the best superhero movies you've ever seen.
Otherwise, he'd say that about like Shazam, right? Like,
right, he's exactly.
Shazam's happening.
Exactly. Which, what another. Zachary Levi, you know what? Fuck it. We're down this road. Zachary Levi, do you think he decided to tweet that out within hours or days of finding out that the DCU doesn't give a fuck about his character? Because so like a week or two ago, he was like, everybody trusts James Gunn. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
And now he's like, here's my fucking vaccine take.
Which
is just like in the
super left field.
In the like, I want to say post pandemic world, like we're moving on. Like, it's not like as if that's what's hot in the street these days. You know, what's hot in the street these days is like inflation.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like
Joe Biden's America.
Yeah, but here's my vaccine take. So I'm wondering how soon he got the word. Like, hey, buddy, it's you know, you better hope that Peacock.
Can we call
it slip?
Peacock
green lights a Chuck reboot film because you're fucking out of here.
Yeah, and he's Gunn said something like, "Look, I'm not gonna agree with everyone. And everyone says, you know, it's like he was like, it doesn't mean that we're kicking him out, but like, it definitely the way he talked about Shazam, even in the video, is like, Shazam's always just kind of been like on in its
fucking
own
off on his own,
and, yeah. And he's like, and it's probably gonna stay that way." It's like, what the fuck?
Wow. Yeah, wild. I mean, look, I have from day one have been saying, and this is the last sort of DCEU dunk. Who are these movies for?
These ones specifically?
No, Shazam. Okay. Who the fuck are these movies for? I don't understand. So we went on this tangent because he says that The Flash is going to reboot the DCU, but the Waller series is going to feature Viola Davis and Peacemaker. Aquaman 2 is going to be a DCU film, so they've already sort of rejiggered it a bit, which is fascinating. And then the final TV series is Booster Gold. So that's kind of the 10,000 foot view of what's to come. I have so many thoughts going, like this is an ADD brain overload right now. I'm just trying to parse through it. I'm thinking that Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn is definitely involved in some way, shape, or form. Like, if they're keeping around Ezra Miller, not quite yet, but if they're keeping around Aquaman, which I guess was the DCEU's most successful film, I would imagine they're going to keep the most acclaimed interpretation that the franchise has done.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the unannounced project. Like, something
that would make sense, right? Yeah. It's interesting because she's the like most consistent thing of like the DC universe outside of Suicide Squad, the first one being kind of rough. Everyone's like, we like her.
And she's like the actress.
Yeah.
Like, it'd be weird. The actress. Yeah.
I know I made that tweet about Mia Goth, but like, I don't want her to be the DC universe Harley Quinn. I like her in the Pattinson universe, which I still don't necessarily see happening or.
And I responded to that. Not trying to be a dick on
no, I know
purpose, but what I meant by that was like that to me would be a DCEU move.
Yeah.
Like, hey, let's introduce a third one. Like, they already have two of them now, right?
Yeah,
they've got to kind of just stick to their pun intended guns here.
Yeah.
So given that there's no word that's come through the trades that she's fired, I'm leaning towards that she's involved some way, shape, or form.
And Margot Robbie's like really fucking young still. She's 32. So she's got crazy. Like
no, she's time. She's not even I think Emma Stone is older than she is. You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy shit like that. Like, she is young.
Yeah, Emma Stone's 34. So,
doesn't that break your brain a little
bit? It does. It makes me uncomfortable. I don't know why, but it does. it's interesting. Like, if they decide we don't have any Harley Quinn projects for this phase, like, let's say this phase is 3 years, 2025 to 2028, right? That's, you still get Margot Robbie in her like mid 30s, so like it's not like we're losing anything here. So it's a lot less time pressure-y than Ben Affleck, who in 10 years will be closer to 60.
So let's start with some general thoughts. I guess that's one of mine. Another one of mine is, and I'm gonna stick to what I know, stick to my guns. I guess that's the new fucking phrase of the DCU, right? Stick to your gun. As a Batman fan, as the podcast resident Batman fan, I think that this is the best outcome that you could have possibly hoped for. Because what they're essentially doing is they're redoing The Dark Knight in a more comic booky sense with the Matt Reeves films and letting Batman fuck off and do Batman things. Deal with gross murderers and conspiracies and all that stuff. But then they're also going to introduce a new version in the DCU, which will serve as their sort of fighting Darkseid and dealing with Superman and interacting with other characters and perhaps and having a son and shit like that. So from the perspective of a Batman fan, I cannot imagine a better announcement in the sense of they are understanding that he is their talisman character and that they could allow Matt Reeves to go off and do whatever the hell he wants to do and then still integrate a new version of the character into their franchise as a whole. And I think that that also speaks to a very like comic, a truly comic book point of view to how they are going to approach the DCU. If you look at these titles, they don't read like film titles. They read like comic book titles.
Yeah.
And I think that that is sort of going to be their ethos of, as cliche as this might sound, the MCU was about how do we make comics a functioning live action film franchise, where I think the DCU is going to be, how do we make comic books real?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love all of the Batman movies we've gotten over the last 20 years. Right. But they have been like, what if Batman was real? And in the Reeves stuff, it's like a more stylized version of that. And he's doing organized crime shit, which is cool. And I wouldn't be surprised if we do see maybe something like Mr. Freeze or whatever. But he's not out there fighting fucking Clayface, right? And I want to see the wackier, not wacky, but like sci-fi-y Batman. And we have not gotten that. The closest we've gotten is Batman and Robin with Arnold Schwarzenegger. And like, it's not what I want. Like, I want Snyder, Cade. Well, yes, okay, like that, but like without Superman, right? With like Batman right, on his own. That's the point I'm making. And we were so close to getting that possibly, but it just never happened. So I'm happy to see, especially this is a different take. It's not Batman's on his own and he's really fucking sad and he's like, oh, my girlfriends suck, and like, he's like, I got a kid.
Most have been like, I don't have a fucking girlfriend. I'm a lone shit, that, Alfred.
It's just like, yeah, he's like, Alfred, you don't understand. I got to do this by myself. You're a real one, but it's all me. And now he's like, I got a kid. And that's like really cool. And we don't have to build up to it. We're just going to start with this new angle, which I think is very fresh.
Which is something that they're doing in general. They're kind of just going to be dropping us in.
Yes.
And that these superheroes have existed in this world. So I think in such a media literate audience, like the one that we have now, shout out to your tweet. that is the right move, right? Because I don't need to see Martha Wayne's string of pearls or Krypton explode for the rest of my life. Ever again.
No.
Okay. Maybe my kids might, but I've seen enough. Okay. Like,
It's a smart move because we can just get into it. We don't have to fucking tell the same story over and over again. We can just be like, oh, we haven't seen fucking Superman fight Brainiac and we don't need to build Superman up. You're just like, this guy's fucking overpowered as shit. And now Brainiac's here and they're going to fight. And I'm like, all in on that.
All right. So why do you trust James Gunn to pull this off, or why not? And do you think the announcements lived up to the hype?
I think the announcements themselves are like, it's interesting. I don't know. Like, some of these are so off the wall. I'm very excited for Swamp Thing because I know they're going to do like an R-rated horror movie, which I think is cool as fuck.
You really think it'll be R?
He said that they will have R-rated projects. And I assume that one lends itself. Yeah. So that's cool. I like to see the variety. I was hoping to see a little more like mainstreamy type heroes that we haven't seen quite yet, who was it? Oh my god, completely left my brain. Whatever. Besides the point, but I want to see
Manhunter.
I think like Martian Manhunter or something like that. But like, we'll get there, I'm sure. The point is here. There is a lack of understanding of how these connect right now. You know, like I see Superman. Yeah. I see Superman, Batman, and Supergirl. Makes sense. Swamp Thing, the Authority. what? Like, that's so crazy to me.
Yeah.
And I mean, I trust that they have that figured out, but it's like, James Gunn said today as well, he was like, this is better than Marvel at the start because we have it planned out. Like, we know, and it's not just here's some projects and we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
So I trust that they understand that. And the other.
Oh, no, I just want to say quick, when they say connected, right? I don't think it's going to be like so much so like you have to see B to understand C
sure.
to understand D. What they said is about lanterns, that they're going to uncover some kind of mysterious secret that connects to the larger DCU. Yeah. So what I think the general connection is, in the same way that Thanos was, is a central villain. Or maybe not so much a figure, but a MacGuffin, Infinity Stone. And I think that they'll do their best to try to carve their own path and not have it be such a, oh, if the villain gets their hands on this thing, you know. But, you know, considering the names here, Paradise Lost, Swamp Thing, Booster Gold, who's like a time traveler, it could be some sort of like deep-rooted earth
scene,
like something that's either been around for a very long time and is coming back, or something that's been, you know, pulling the strings and ready to unleash that. It because I think that they said that chapter one is gods and monsters. Where do all of those things intersect? Earth.
Yeah, because
and I think that that'll be, and I know that that sounds kind of like simple-minded, but I think that that is sort of where the key is. It'll be something ancient.
That's kind of what they were doing with the Snyder stuff, right? With the mother boxes all kind of being buried on Earth. But I think
it'll be less sci-fi.
I think so, too.
Yeah. Because those are the most complicated plot devices I've ever heard of in my entire life. I don't really understand them still. So they really got to come down a bit.
Yeah, the interesting thing about that is there is no Justice League on the slate, right? Like, there's no event movie at the end of this that they've announced so far. That could be what this other unannounced project is. We don't know, but... it is interesting to see them kind of taking it a little slower and not building up to the Justice League or whoever. And then the other reason I trust kind of Gunn here is the business side of Warner Brothers has changed a lot in the last year, right? We know this because of Zaslav coming in and just taking a wrecking ball to everything. And in hindsight, I think it's easy to be like, he made some really hard decisions and it seems like they're getting things on track in a way that has not been the case for Warner Brothers in quite some time.
And that tangents right into why I kind of trust them as well. Their comments about Batgirl are kind of ice cold.
Yeah. They didn't have to say that. They're just like, look, it wasn't good. Like,
yeah. So, and I, you know, whether or not you respect the vision, there's a vision, you know, and that is, and they're just not like, hey, let's shit out Batgirl for the sake of it. And I appreciate that from where we've come from. So I think, in addition to what you and I both said, the reason that I think that I have faith in Gunn is if you consider Marvel to be not only the defining superhero franchise of the last 20 years of all time, but the defining genre of the last 20 years, right? I think he is responsible for the best of those films.
Mm-hmm.
From truly at their core, not in terms of box office or special effects, but all the pieces fitting together to make an emotional narrative that thrills you mentally, physically, or not quite physically.
I get mentally, hard. So
mentally, spiritually, psychologically, all those things. Guardians 1, I put in the same conversation as Star Wars. So I think if there's a man who is equipped to, you know, if he could do that with a despicable raccoon and a grunting tree, right? He proved he could do it there. And then he jumped over to DC and basically proved that he could do the same thing with like a sociopathic jock. Imagine what he could do with the likes of Superman, of the story of being alone in the universe on a planet that rejects you, or sometimes need, like, they love you when they need you, but when they don't, they reject you. And sort of Gunn's ability to put himself in the perspective of the outsider, but now being able to channel that to the insiders, I think is really promising, because comic book characters are ultimately, even though they're idolized, they're outsiders, they're loners, they are alone in this world. And I think that he understands that.
Yeah, I think that he has a good head on his shoulders with knowing. One of the interesting things I read today, too, was he was like, here's why the Snyder stuff didn't work. It wasn't Snyder. It was that there was no like hierarchy of power here. You know, we've been saying that as a joke for a while, but like there was nothing in place to stop anyone from just coming in and steering the ship into a completely new direction. It was like you had Jeff Johns, Walter Hamada, and all these other people that were just like, I don't know, hey, Steven Spielberg, want to make this movie that's never going to come out? And then like, it just, nothing make any fucking sense. And everyone had their say in a way that should not have been the case. And he's like, I'm in charge. If you want to make a movie, you got to come to me. We'll make sure it fits in, not we'll figure it out later. Right, and that's exactly the way it needs to be.
Yeah. All right, Cade, which two projects do you think that you're most hyped for?
I mean, I'm going to be very basic here. Oh, I mean, but
it's kind of hard not to be, right?
Batman and Superman. But I'd also say Swamp Thing. I've said that already.
Okay, so I'm going to kind of veer off. I'm going to go Superman as well, because I think that that's the key to the whole thing. You know, since 1987, Superman 4, which starred Christopher Reeve, he's had two solo films. Superman, 36 years.
Fucking insane.
It's nuts. So, of course, that's at the top of the list, right? Because
yeah.
Man of Steel, the last time that they made an original Superman film. Brave and the Bold, of course, I'm hyped for that. But there's tons of Batman shit in the world, so I'm going to lean away from that. I'm going to go Lanterns.
Yeah.
Green Lantern hasn't been done in a decade, which was a famously disastrous film. He is one of DC's probably top five characters. I think it's interesting that it's going to be a show.
Yeah.
I really hope Greg Berlanti. Is he still involved in this? Because that guy is prolific, but 50%, if not more, of his stuff is trash. So I really hope that he's not involved. But that said, if done well, and considering the fact that they're kind of saying they're going to be space cop detectives investigating like an ancient secret on Earth, sold. And they're like, yeah, we're not like... Here is the epitome of the difference between the DCEU and the DCU. When the DCEU was planning their Green Lantern show, they picked two obscure lanterns to like lead the show. You know what I mean? Like, oh, let's be here. They're like, not only are you going to get Hal and Jon Stewart, but you're getting them together.
Yeah, that's sweet. Of course. Yeah,
just like stop fucking dicking around. What they want. It's just insane.
You don't have to go obscure to make yourself seem fucking cool. Just be like,
you don't have to go obscure to be you. What?
Give me what I want, because you've been fucking like rejecting that for me for so goddamn long. And I don't understand why.
You don't have to be obscure to be unique. Let's do some fan casting and then we'll move on to Cade's gaming corner. First up, Batman and Superman in the MCU. I'll start. It's finally time. I think that if they cast him now and start shooting in a few years, they could squeeze him in. Jake Gyllenhaal. I've been calling for him to be Batman since before they cast Ben Affleck. I think he's at the perfect age to have a sort of, 13 or 14-year-old son, right?
Yeah.
Please, somebody, I beg of you.
Yeah, no, it's perfect. I literally same boat for Batman because, like you said, I don't really know... That's someone that he's been like, as far as I know, talked to about Batman in the past. Like people have approached him or like they've had meetings or whatever. And that was something that could have happened at some point, but never really did. Now is the time. I mean, he's prime age.
40. And he's been saying yes to tons of like blockbuster shit.
Yeah.
So if somebody shows up like, hey, do you want to be Batman for 10 years? He'll be like, I'm fucking down.
Yeah, I think so too. He seems to have... I like when he does his little, not artsy, I wouldn't say that, but more prestige stuff. Mm-hmm. But he's really good in blockbustery stuff like Spider-Man and Ambulance and whatnot. He can do it all. So I would love to see him as Batman. He's got the right look and the right primal rage inside of him.
Cade, who do you have for Superman?
I don't know. I really don't know. I feel bad not being able to come up with something. But like, this seems like someone who probably be in their 20s, probably, maybe very, very, very early 30s by the time they get going on this. But the one and only name that jumped out to me, and people have suggested him in the past, is that guy that's on Euphoria. What's his name? Jacob.
Oh, Jacob Elordi.
Yeah, I think
he's a popular one.
He's 6'5". He's a fucking giant.
Right. That is, yeah.
That is Superman height. So I think he's got a good look. He seems like he's the problem is with Superman is he's a very big character, right? But like physically, but he's also very emotionally in tune. You can't just get someone who's a hunk and like looks like they could beat the shit out of you. You want someone with like real range and depth.
I also don't necessarily think he has to be like a behemoth 6'2" like, sure. person. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think the fact that he's just super strong is enough. You know what sure. I mean? Just make his body look strong and then.
Yeah.
So, all right. For me, this one I feel like is basic because it is hard to cast this character, right?
It is.
And I feel like picturing it in my mind's eye, it doesn't look quite right, but I feel like it would work on film. And my answer is Miles Teller because, you know, Whiplash, he's shown he has serious dramatic chops. And in Top Gun, he's shown that he could be sort of like the leading alpha male,
definitely
heart of gold type dude. He's 35. I think that's a good age for your sort of, you know, Superman franchise leading character. He's a movie star. He's a good old fashioned American. You know what I mean? It's like, he just looks and it's like Miles Teller. You couldn't come up with a more American name than that. And then my backup would be somebody who's been linked to the role of Nightwing for a while is actually Dylan O'Brien. Every time I see him pop up in something, I enjoy him. I think he's got the looks. I've seen him show off the physicality that you might need for that type of role. So if he were to gain like 20 pounds, I think he'd be solid as well.
The other one that I just saw suggested online was Logan Lerman. He played Percy Jackson.
Similar kind of dude. Yeah.
Yeah. He, and I'm looking at the very first picture that pops up for him on Google and he's got these like very beautiful, I think they're blue eyes and he's got this perfect hair. And I'm like, this guy's got the look. Like,
did you see Bullet Train?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he's the guy with the tattoos on his face that they find dead.
Oh, yeah. I think he is. Like, yeah. That's crazy.
All right, Cade. And then the last fan casting I want to do is the Green Lanterns. Give me your Hal Jordan.
Oh, my God. Who is the guy that they were like looking at for the show? Cause I looked it up. The Greg Berlanti thing is dead. Apparently that was a space opera and they're like, nah, we're not fucking with that.
All right. So for me, Hal Jordan is Harris Dickinson. He is the lead in Triangle of Sadness. He was also in The Kingsman. I think he's also going to be in that A24 wrestling film with, Zac Efron and the dude from, The Bear. What the hell is his name?
I don't even know what this is. I've never heard his name
is. Yeah, he is the Iron Claw. So he's in Where the Crawdads Sing as well. I think that this guy has got the sort of like alpha male-y pilot sort of blonde hair look that you need for this. I think he's shown that he's got the chops for it. I mean, his last three films are See How They Want, Run, Triangle of Sadness, and Where the Crawdads Sing. That's a pretty good run. And then next he's got that A24 film. And then my backup sort of more trendy pick would be Glenn Powell, also of Top Gun Maverick fame.
That's a good pick.
As for John Stewart, I'm going with Academy Award winner Daniel Kaluuya. I think he's fucking perfect for this role. I feel like that this is a layup. The unfortunate problem is that this is a TV show, right? So like, yeah. How do you convince an Oscar winner to come do a show? I feel like, you That's know, they've valid. Got to promise him appearances in films as well. But, you know, otherwise that would be my guy. And then my B choice would be, you know, I'm waiting on him for a comeback. He's charismatic as hell. He's one of the saving graces of the newest Star Wars films, John Boyega.
I like that. For John Stewart, the guy, did you ever see Moonlight?
Mm.
The lead of Moonlight, Trevante Rhodes. He, obviously, if you've seen Moonlight, you know, very good actor in general.
Yeah.
Got the look. Yeah. I would say that. Where's he been? It looks like I'm looking at his filmography. He kind of had some bombs. He did 12 Strong, that like Chris Hemsworth movie, yep. The Predator reboot, which sucked ass. Bird Box, and then he played Mike Tyson in a like mini series that came out on Hulu last year.
Gotcha. Okay. All right, that's not a bad run.
It so he's like
he just needs the right role to come up and grab him.
And oh my God, what's Denzel's son's name? John David Washington.
John David Washington.
Obvious.
He looks just like John Stewart. Yeah.
Obvious. So those two, I think, are great John Stewart picks.
All right, finally, to cap it off, a little bit of it. It's been a while. Kate's Game and Corner. Yeah. Look, so going into this, James Gunn has said that gaming is going to be interconnected to the DCU as well. In his video and in the trays, I didn't see much. So when you texted me today, when you said, did you hear about the gaming? I said, no. So tell me on the show live. So I hear it live for the first time. I was thinking about it so much that I did tweet today. Now it's an open world Superman game, you cowards. Like,
yeah,
2023. What's the space one that's coming out from Rockstar or the Red Dead team? Oh, no, sorry. The
Bethesda
Fallout team.
Starfield.
Like, yeah. If we're capable of doing that, we're capable of a Superman game. Let's get it going here.
Yeah. So basically, James Gunn said, like, gaming is going to be a big part of this, but it's not going to be like in the early 2000s. If you were a Spider-Man movie, you got a Spider-Man game, and it was the story of the movie expanded upon, right? And they were okay at best. Some of them were Spider-Man 2 is obviously one of the best Spider-Man games, but if you look back at it, you're like, what the hell was that? But that is not the plan. Instead, the games will tie together as like expansions of the story. So the way he described it was, we're going to have a Superman movie and a Supergirl movie, and those are going to be 2 years apart. What happens in between? A crypto game is what he said. That's Superman's dog. And he's like, I don't think he means they're going to make a crypto game, but
right,
here is, you know, a example of what we could do. But he was like, we're not doing tie-ins. It's going to be stuff that fills in the blanks. And I think that's a really good way of utilizing it. And I hope that means, you know, like, if you're going to do the Superman origin, right, do it in a game. If you want to do it in a game. And that way you can show
I love Krypton. That fucking point. I love that point.
You can do all this stuff that people don't want to see in a movie and just be like, well, here it is, playable. And you get to be Jor-El on fucking Krypton as it's blowing up or whatever and doing crazy shit.
Now you're like, talking my language, dude.
There's a lot of ways to do it. So you can, for the longest time, we've had books or comic books that kind of serve as prequels or epilogues to movies. Just do it as a game, you know, it'll take longer, but I think it'll pay off. Mm-hmm. So that's the idea that they're going for.
But no, like, hardcore news.
No. And I imagine it's because games take so long to make and they are a lot easier to just like disappear and go away. People always complain about the secrecy of gaming. And I'm like, because projects take like 6 years to come out. So like by the time they start, it's going to be like the year before Supergirl comes out when we see probably the first game that's really connected to all of this.
Yeah. Okay. So. All right. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, The Last of Us Episode 3 breakdown.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Okay, and we're back. The Last of Us, Episode 3, long, long time. In the present, Joel and Ellie heed Tess's final instructions and hike to meet allies Bill and Frank. On their journey, Joel teaches Ellie about the government's execution of innocents during the early days of the outbreak. So while we don't get a cold open, the episode itself is kind of a flashback. So I think that doesn't mean that this is the death of the Last of Us cold opens. I just think that because this one largely existed in the past, they maybe probably just skipped it this week. So in a flashback to 2007, Frank stumbles upon the compound of paranoid survivalist Bill, who takes him in, and the two form a romantic relationship, sharing a love of music and food. Several years later, Frank contacts Tess over the radio, and the couples enter a tenuous friendship. In the present, Frank is crippled by a degenerative illness and asks Bill to euthanize him after they marry. But Bill, not wanting to live without Frank, kills himself as well. Joel and Ellie arrive sometime later, and they discover a letter that Bill left for Joel, where he tells him that protecting Frank is what gave his life meaning after the outbreak. Bill leaves Joel his truck and supplies and weapons. Joel takes the truck and sets out with Ellie to find Tommy. Okay, so going into this, you saw this a month ago. Did you have this take when you first saw it? Like, so the general take out there going into it is that this is one of the best episodes of TV, if not just recently of all time. The reviews were that raving. And I'm not saying I don't think it's phenomenal, but I am going to push back on sort of the greatest episode of TV of all time. So I, as I've said on this podcast a few times, I'm watching live. I'm not going ahead. I watched this one on Saturday, but that's still the same weekend, right? You watched this a fucking while ago. So I'm curious, what did you feel before the collective consciousness was able to sort of sweep you away?
I've seen the episode three times now. I watched it twice. First time I watched it and was making notes. Second one, I was writing my recap. And the third one, I just watched it to watch it. And the third time is when I think it hit me the hardest, which I found really surprising since I knew everything was going to happen. Do I think it's the best episode of TV ever? Which I have seen that take. That's not hyperbole in terms of where that's coming from. No, like it's very, very good. And I would say in recent memory, absolutely. But like when I think of best TV episodes ever, I think of like Ozymandias from Breaking Bad, right? Like that's crazy TV right there. So no, but I do remember thinking when I watched it, I'm like, this is going to have a big reaction online. Did I think it was going to be this big? No, but I really do think I was like, people are going to love the performances. I was like, this is immediately going to cause pushback from people who are shitty gamers and are like, gay people. What in my TV? And especially because Bill and Frank's relationship in the game is a lot more implied and not explicit, and so I was like, this is going to cause discourse. And in the game, Bill's alive and he's not in the show, so you know, in The Last of Us Part Three, the game, he could show up theoretically, but yeah, so there's a lot of differences, but I was like, this is going to be a very well-received piece of television when it comes out.
Yeah, look, I loved it. I don't think it was as, for something to be as great as it's being hailed as, it needs to be unique, right?
Yeah.
And I think that I've seen this story tons in my life. In TV, in the last few years alone, I've seen similar stories in The Leftovers and Station 11 and Watchmen to varying degrees of success. Some just as good, some worse, some better. This absolutely is among the pantheon of like time capsule slice of life. Romanticizing the day in and day out in a broken world of TV episodes out there. But the point is that it's done before. It has been done before to such an extent that the music cue that likely made you start to cry, it made me start to cry because it works every fucking time, is a Max Richter song called On the Nature of Daylight, which came out, I believe, in 2004. It was not part of a soundtrack at the time. It was just his own piece of writing. It has since been used in the likes of Stranger Than Fiction and Arrival. And there's one more than I'm
It's the like song that plays when he's taking them to get like their clothes and stuff, right?
When they like go for a walk. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you see like a American flag gently blowing in the breeze and just a very like, almost
somber,
melancholic,
sure,
sort of montage. Oh, and also Shutter Island. So this song has been heard in the likes of Stranger Than Fiction and Arrival and Shutter Island. So for all of the, you know, praise of it being sort of this transcendent revolutionary TV, I think that that's sort of undercut by the fact that its soundtrack is literally in and of itself unoriginal.
Sure.
Now, with all that said, is this one of the most moving pieces of TV I've ever seen? Absolutely. Is Nick Offerman, is that like a career changing hour from him? Absolutely. Is Murray Bartlett now one of the favorite TV actors out there? Definitely. Is this a wonderful expansion of the game's lore? Of course. So I think my point is that I'm not so much pushing about back on the episode itself. I'm pushing back of the culture of the Rotten Tomatoes culture, right?
Sure.
The journalist tell you, hey, it's the greatest TV episode of all time. And then guess what? All the fans are saying the same thing. And I know that that maybe sounds a bit, I mean, it's holier than thou the word, or like, I get it and you don't.
Yeah.
No, but I want people to sort of have the ability to make their own opinions about things and not just get swept away because it's, oh, wow, Ron Swanson's gay. Whoa, you know what I mean? Like legitimately, you know, take it in for all that it is, which all that it is a 9 out of 10. It's fucking phenomenal.
Yeah.
but it's not original.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't need to be original for it to be best TV ever. It's just like, I don't know. There's something about it that's like, it is harder to. I get what you're saying though, because like, if it's not unique, how can it really transform your emotions, right? Like, it's like, I've felt this way before. It does not hit me in the most powerful sense.
Arrival literally ends on a montage of their life in sort of a rustic Americana home to this song.
Yeah. So it hits a lot of the same notes. I get that. Yeah. But I mean, like you've been saying and I've been saying, this episode is fantastic. And if I had to place my bet, maybe, I mean, I've only seen the first four episodes. I would say this will probably be the best, maybe the second best, depending on how well they handle the ending of the show.
Mm. It's interesting to know what's coming, right? Because,
yeah,
and we aren't going to touch on it here, but just by virtue of knowing the plot, the finale is going to be fucking bonkers. So like, yeah, you could pencil that one in as one of the best ones that we'll see. I have no doubt about that. So it's going to be the finale and then like, and then this one.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, because that finale, like, again, I'm not going to say what happens, but like, there's a lot that could go wrong there. Like, it's very easy to mess that up, I think. But they've shown so far they're very capable, and they have the creator of the game there to guide them.
Yeah.
So I trust them. But yeah, that is a delicate balancing act, I think.
And I will just say, this week's was so good that I know that something is great when I want to consume more of it, right? So as you, I've watched it three times. Mm. Usually I only watch these twice. And it's so good. I want to go and rewatch Parks and Rec to get my, just get Nick in my life more. But I also want to go back and rewatch The Leftovers, which I think is the closest comp that this show deserves, which is an unbelievable compliment, not only in general, but from me, as I consider that my favorite show of all time.
Sure.
So that is where this is going. So as I've said, if you thought that this week's was a transformative week of TV, I implore you to go watch that show, to go watch Station 11, and to go watch Watchmen, conveniently, all of which are HBO shows. Cade, our gaming master, tell us about what do you want to speak on sort of the major departures from the fact that this was the biggest departure from the game so far?
Yeah, I mean, none of this is in the game. None of this. Not even the stuff that you see at the beginning, just, really.
For all the people who are trying to push back on, oh, they shoehorned in this gay plot.
Yeah.
It is implied that Bill is gay in absolutely. The games. Yeah.
Yeah. So all of that is felt or known or understood when you're playing the game. When you play the game. So the way it happens in the game is, after Tess dies, they go to Bill and Frank's, and you don't see anything in between. They just kind of show up. And the whole town is booby-trapped, kind of as you see it in the show. And Ellie and Joel have to make their way through the town to find Bill. And it's kind of been, like, not overrun, but, like, worn down by the infected. So they're in the town kind of roaming around. And eventually Bill shows up and he's like, what are you doing here, Joel? And he's like, I need a truck. And they make their way through the town. And you learn more about this guy who has been surviving in this town. And just, like, there's a infected sitting in a windowsill, and he's like, oh, forgot to take care of that, and just cuts his head off. And it's like so nonchalant.
Casual,
and,
yeah.
Yeah. And then the whole time, Joel does not reveal to Bill that Tess is dead. And so he just goes on thinking, you know, why would Tess do this to you? Why are you here? And there's a big battle in the high school with this thing called the bloater. And none of this is in the show. But because so much of that is gameplay driven, there's very little actual story or like character development happening during this time. It's more just a means to get Joel this truck to move on. They had to make something up for the show, because right. You can't have them just walking around for an hour killing things. So instead they were like, let's just flesh out Bill and Frank's love story. And it's very beautiful. And I think it's the smart move, because in the end, there's a letter that Bill leaves for Joel in the show that basically tells Joel what he needs to hear. Like, hey, I hated humanity, and then I found someone to love and to protect that made me whole. And that is the arc that Joel will go on, and sets up some of the choices that he will have to make later on. So I think it's a really smart and eloquent way of changing something that is still going to have the same end result of getting Joel to where he needs to be.
Well, that was one of my favorite parts about it. The way that they weaved it into the past, present, and future of the main storyline, right? So while I have my problems with the sort of guest star of the week format, I understand that that's sort of the nature of TV. And you've got to fill the spaces somehow. Mm-hmm. So I like how they... Ron Swanson doesn't show up until 15 minutes or so in. So there is very much an Ellie and Joel prologue. Sorry. Mm-hmm. And not Ron Swanson.
Nick Offerman.
Nick Offerman.
I thought you said that on purpose. Can you imagine? He's just over here talking to you about like wood.
But that is why the casting is so great, right? Because he is, you know, one of the most typecast dudes.
And he wasn't even supposed to play this role. This was a last minute addition. There was a scheduling conflict with the other guy.
Oh, wow. Fantastic. The point is that when you watch him, I think he knows that what you're seeing is Nick Offerman and Ron Swanson sort of like leverage that in this role was genius.
Absolutely.
Getting back on track here, there's very much a Joel and Ellie prologue. And the reason that what is the Kickstarter of the Bill and Frank story is him explaining they were shooting innocent people in the streets and they showed them the bones and then they showed the neighborhood where innocent people were being round up. So that's the prologue. Then Joel and Tess show up in the present day narrative of this sort of vignette. And then again, Joel and Ellie show up at the end. So the way that they were able to weave it into the story itself, I thought was brilliant.
Yeah. And I also just loved that the small lore additions that we're getting with like Joel being like, hey, you're a kid. You weren't even alive when this happened. Planes fell out of the fucking sky, which I wrote a tweet about. I'm like, that's terrifying. Save those thoughts. Okay.
Save those thoughts. So as you touched on, I think that the reason that I bring in the way that this is weaved into the story is because they use the story of Bill and Frank to make a thematic point about Joel, right? And we also saw this thematic sort of push from Tess last week, where literally these characters are dying by the wayside and each death is sort of pushing him further towards the light. And I think that that is perfectly sort of eloquated in the letter to him, where it goes against the screenwriting theology of show don't tell,
right?
Like Bill literally being like, hey, you're out here to protect those women, you know? So I do think that that's a bit heavy-handed, but the show is operating at such a high level that I think it still worked, even though like in a lesser show people would have been like, yeah, we get it, bro. Yes. Like, we know he's here to fucking protect people. What else are we doing here? But I think that, you know, the show has been subtle enough in other places that the thematic pushes, like now, I think is when the show is really about to start, right? Joel has sort of been emotionally repositioned as somebody willing to accept love in his life and to use that love to protect. And now he's alone with little girl. So now not only is he in the mindset of reopening his heart, but he's in the situation that closed it in the first place.
Yes, exactly. Like I was saying the other day of people maybe not being the most media literate, is this is a show. Everyone for the longest time in the games industry has been, Last of Us is very good. And then it transitioned to Last of Us is really fucking stupid because it's the copy of The Road. And like, it's more simple than it is complex.
Everything's
and
a copy of everything.
I just like, I'm like, shut the fuck up. Just enjoy the goddamn game.
Yeah.
but it was really annoying because I'm like, now you have people saying, like, I don't understand what the point of this episode was. I don't know who these characters are. I don't know why we need to care about them. I'm like, the whole point is in the fucking letter at the end. So there, as I understand,
like,
your point.
Beaten over the fucking head with it.
I absolutely agree. I was like, when I saw him, like, all right, we could probably go without this. And then I see Twitter. I'm like, all right, yeah, I remember people fucking make these shows for the dumbasses who can't comprehend these things. So understood.
All right. One more thing that I want to touch on, and something that we've spoken about a bit. And now when I said this on previous podcasts, you knew it was coming. And I now, thinking back on your smirks and chuckles, you probably were thinking like, oh boy, he's going to be pissed. And that's sort of the guest star of the week format.
Yeah.
You know, they did it with Anna Torv. They've done it with Nick Offerman and Murray Bartlett. I imagine they're going to do it with Melanie Linsky as well. And maybe even Gabrielle Luna, who's playing Tommy, depending on what point in the timeline they bring him back in. It's a serialized show. but it's also based on a finite video game. So while procedural elements of introducing characters week by week played by somewhat notable actors only to have them have their storyline wrapped up by the end of that week is not what I'm usually into, I understand the need to do it. This Bill and Frank story, which was not invented in the game, is going to be the one that they submit to the Emmys. But more importantly, it took up a week of time. If they were to only do the events of the game, the show would be done in 6 weeks. You know, so they have to fill in the margins with stuff. And if they're going to be filling in the margins, I would like it to be a beloved sitcom actor like Nick Offerman putting in a career defining turn.
Right. Yeah. And as far as I understand, I know someone who has seen the whole show and they said like the back half of the series is like just
very
serialized. Like it is, it is just the game. So you won't see these more like vignette type things. But even like The Last of Us game, if you really think about it, is a lot of not guests of the week, but like I said it in a tweet yesterday too, of these are like the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future for Joel. Is like all of these people teach him something. So you have Bill, Tess, Frank, Sam, Henry, and then there's an antagonist named David that shows up a little later in the game. And all of these people contribute something to Joel, and maybe things to learn, maybe things to avoid. And so that's kind of the story of The Last of Us. And it's inescapable. But I do understand your point of like in the game, like you have several hours with some of these characters. And in the show, you're not going to get that. You're going to get 45 minutes with them or whatever, because that's just the pace the show goes at. So it is frustrating to have someone so great and then they wrap that up pretty much as soon as you start to get attached to them.
That was my exact tweet. I'm like, dude, they're killing these fucking characters off. I'm like, that's my guy. That reminds me of you didn't watch it, but in House of the Dragon, like in the very early stages, you aren't really sure like who to root for and who's the main character and who's gonna stick around. So I like planted my flag in this one guy. I'm like, Harwin Strong, that's my dude. That's my fucking boy. Literally the next week he gets murdered in like a gloriously brutal fashion, like burnt alive with his father in the next room. So
that's Thrones, baby.
Yep. All right. So before we wrap up this week, I want to genuinely, and this is not even for the purpose of like fighting back against trolls, this is because I believe it. This is the Bella Ramsey appreciation segment, which I think we might need to have every week. I think that this is an Emmy nominated performance waiting to happen. I think she's locked in. Her ability to, and this is acting 101, right? To act like she's hearing about something for the first time, which seems very difficult to me. And that's why I said to save your thoughts. Her ability to marvel at planes, like her saying, dude, you got to go up in the sky, which reads like a very corny sort of cliched line. But like when you think about it, like we think about that all the time. I'm like, how the fuck am I in the sky right now? Her ability to like deliver that line in a non-corny but in a genuine, here's how I feel, I can't believe that way, and then just sort of her face when she walks into Bill's house, she's never seen a house that looks like a house like that, like that is what houses are, that is when a house looks like a home, she's never seen that before. And so for her to be like, whoa. And then the best of them all is when Joel tells her to put on her seatbelt. And she's like, oh, I don't know what that is. Looks at him as if he just spoke an alien language, like legitimately not of this earth. And she does it all in her face. The face acting of her being like, I don't know what, I've never heard the word seatbelt in my entire life, is just incredible. She is incredible so far.
And it's interesting too, because it's kind of like the, what would the caveman react to if you showed them a smartphone? She's like the modern version of that. And that's again one of my favorite parts of the game, is just like Ellie walking to a record store and just seeing all this music, and she's like, why is this all here? Like, what happened? Like, you mean there's all this music that no one is listening to?
Right. Yeah.
And she's like heartbroken by it. And it's like such a beautiful thing to see someone appreciate what we take for granted. Yeah. And it being able to really illustrate that. And the thing I was gonna say about the planes was just like, that is a terrifying thought of being trapped in a plane and people just start fucking like spazzing out in their seats and then just like mauling each other and like stacking on top of each other. I think there's something like that in World War Z, if I remember correctly.
Dude, but did you watch Station 11 or no?
I haven't, but you keep mentioning it. So
there's a part of one where a plane lands and they literally have to like have a phone call to convince that to convince the captain, like, you can't let these people off this plane.
Is it zombies? Is that what that show is?
No, no, but it's a pandemic. Like, okay, just sick.
Fascinating. Okay,
yeah, like,
that's
it's
cool.
Like a flu, you just die. So it's like a pilot and they land and they're home and they're carrying it, but they have to like call in and convince them, like, you can't let these people off the plane.
That's horrible. So yeah, that's like just an amazing way to emphasize how quickly everything went to shit. Just like planes are falling out of the sky because people started eating each other on the planes. Yep. So yeah, I love little stuff like that. And you're right though, Bella Ramsey is great. And I'd be interested to see the transition from this Ellie to The Last of Us Part Two Ellie, because Bella is doing a great job playing a cute kid with that innocence in her. And The Last of Us Part Two is like, what happens when your innocence gets totally corrupted?
Well, I think I think part of the casting must have been like, we need an X-year-old to X-year-old girl. So she is on the show during her growth spurt.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, I don't know how else you do that, because it's a multi-year jump in the games, right?
Yeah, it's about 5 years. So,
and she goes from what, being like 13 to 18? Like, that's a huge difference.
So I'll be interested to see how they handle that, because she's 19 right now, Bella Ramsey. So she's probably, if she's not fully grown, she's about to be. So
you're doing a great I think this was filmed like,
it was like 2021.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
And maybe a little bit of 2022. So she probably would have been like 17.
Not 19 in the show.
No.
She looks the age that she's playing.
Yeah. And so I'll be interested to see how they handle that when she's a little darker, a little more. And Ellie in the TV or the second game is like incredibly lanky. And like, she just has this totally different, I mean, because she's a much more edgy teenager in that game, and there's a whole lot of stuff with that. I'll be very curious to see how they pull that off.
All right, so that's going to do it for us this week. Make sure to follow Cade at Cade_Onder and all the great work he's doing at comicbook.com. Make sure to follow me at Eric Italiano, all the work I'm doing at Bro Bible, and the podcast at Postcred Pod. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Next week we'll be talking about The Last of Us Episode 4, which is the last one that most journalists have seen. Cade and I include, well, not me, but they sent me 4. I've not watched them. Cade got 4. He has. Some people got the full ones. Good for them. I'm also seeing Ant-Man next Monday, so I think the embargo will probably, the social embargo will probably release by the time we record. So we'll talk about that a little bit. All right, y'all. We will talk to you next week. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.